This is Friday Forum. I'm Rachel Cobb for KGLP. Normally we're here during the noon hour, but because we're airing some education documentaries, I've decided to have this special edition of Friday Forum at this hour. The first of the 2018 Navajo Nation presidential debates will begin at 5 p.m. Mountain Daylight Time this Tuesday, October 16th, at the Navajo Tech Wellness Center on the Crown Point, New Mexico campus, with a debate between Jonathan Nez and Joe Shirley Jr.'s running mates, Myron Leiser and Boone Nigren, followed by the main event with Mr. Nez and Mr. Shirley at around 6 p.m. Doors to the debate will open at 4 p.m. with tribal, state, and federal politicians setting up informational booths by 3 p.m. Navajo Nation Broadcasting, KTNN, KWRK, and NTU's campus station, KCZY, will provide live streaming of the presidential debate starting at approximately 6 p.m. The vice president's debate will not be aired. For more information about the debate or to reserve space for a political booth, you may email D, as in Dene, V, as in Victor, A, N, as in Navajo, D, as in Dene, E, V as in Victor, E, R, at NavajoTech.edu. D, Vandever, at NavajoTech.edu. I'm here with Jonathan Nez, Vice President of the Navajo Nation, and also one of two candidates, the other one being former President Joe Shirley, in the running as the next president of the Navajo Nation.
Jonathan Nez, Anido, Ashin Slontranes, Sani Ibashin, Twitchin, the Shichedo, Trachini, the Chanel and Leshan, Tordain, Anasha, Arocodo, E, not Ani, the Shosla, Beneshlon, La Nahedon, Hayestio, Arocumba, Bandit, Inigi, E, D, and Hits Easto, Bada Hiliado Les. Hat nene ina antinige e di jimpe de hoilza. Ado dido nihidag en da hat oa leil. Da hat no e hut anna nitin. Ado di kun anan set dag eten e chadeil indo leil. Di no kut aon da hit a. Jol kda e kut aon ina nishadeil inde do kut a e jian chadeil inde nihitz ispayat egi. Ado tz da di kun nihili dat egi do a e do de ta. Kita e do shin la kan hat ni dan de do di e ya hat ni gi do ze do nat aro di tlo do nat zi hat ni gi e do do kon ha lon dan de ni hits is ba da hui lia len de kita jo e bi je e na ant ki ni gi di je be na ni tin do le hat no jo e ko da e ko a shi je hon ne do ko do ni je hat di zi hat ni gi she la nan sen le Lalia Bahogan de Do, Ada don hitch yan da honey to less do lay. Ye must son hitch ye adden da dinky do, Ada, Ada do baat, Edo less, Ada, Anni hitch de dando less than, and ye must son hitch ye. So, she got adden she ain't do la nansen. Ah, don he dag and da do less do, Ada do besser, bell in do less, Joe hut a econ, nanisha do less at no, by a dat here. So a hair la an otuka daison tsagi she kodo a hair in hidini do that. Good day, everybody. This is Jonathan Nez, the Navajo Nation Vice President. And I want to say thank you to all our listeners out there. We've been helping out with the Dene Food Sovereignty Alliance and promoting health and wellness throughout our Navajo Nation. And many people know health and wellness movement is happening all across the country. I want to say all across the world, to where people are wanting to eat better, be more active, and it's no different in tribal communities and on the Navajo Nation. I think there's a big push to eat organic, and in on the Navajo Nation, it's eating our indigenous foods. Many of our traditional seeds have been handed down from one generation to the next. You may call it legacy seeds. And on the Navajo Nation, we're really wanting to bring farming back to the forefront and to farm, to grow our own indigenous fruits and vegetables once again, and to even go as far as saying that to bring those foods into our convenience stores, our schools, our healthcare centers, and to offer that type of food to our people. As many of you know, in indigenous communities, we have high rates of diabetes. Studies indicate 1 out of 3, 1 out of 4 people on tribal reservations have diabetes. And so with the help of the Dene Food Sovereignty Alliance, with our office, the Vice President's office, we've been going out there and having just one-on-one discussions with our community members and to encourage them to come back to farming. And we also have this big project on trail developments throughout the nation. We're putting in permanent trails in our chapters and our communities so that people can stay healthy. And then also encouraging our families to have a garden, if not a farm, then maybe a garden within their area where they dwell. And now we are challenging ourselves to really put our foot down. If we're calling ourselves a true sovereign nation, then we should have the ability to regulate and certify our own foods, just as we did many, many years ago. But, you know, USDA is always there to say, you got to have our okay in order for those foods to be offered or sold in our stores and public facilities throughout our nation. But, you know, we know how to certify and regulate our own foods. I mean, we're still alive today, so we know how to do those things. And so this Food Sovereignty Alliance and us, we have been going out throughout the Navajo Nation to talk about food sovereignty. You know, 27,000 square miles, Navajo Nation, the size of West Virginia, our land base. So that's plenty of land to feed, I think, every single Navajo that we have, and then some. I envision one day that we will feed ourselves and we will help feed others. I mean, there's a big push for organic foods throughout the country. And I think there on the Navajo Nation, if we can capitalize it and if we can take an initiative to say we'll start growing our foods there, I think it'll gain popularity, not just with Navajo, but folks in New Mexico, Arizona, all in the Southwest. I think we could be a real big producer of foods in this whole region. And it's all about health and wellness. I mean, eating right, exercising, putting good things into our body, you know. And I have my own personal story about health and wellness, being a leader in my community and not taking care of myself, being behind the wheel hours at a time, eating fast food, and not being active. You know, I got to a point where I was over 300 pounds. And, you know, as a leader, I go out there throughout the Navajo Nation telling folks, and speaking at conferences, telling folks, you know, take care of yourself, eat right, eat good stuff, stay active, run. And yet they look at me at that time, 300 pounds, and, you know, they don't see that that trueness in me. And one day, you know, there was a young man who stood up and said, well, Mr. Nez, you tell us to eat right and exercise, but every year we see you, you're just getting bigger and bigger, you know. I got offended, you know, I got hurt. But after I got over that, I realized, yeah, this young man was right. It is correct. And if I'm going to tell people to eat right and stay active, you know, I better do it myself. And that started my health and wellness transformation, if you may. Started walking, running, and kept running, you know, not to boast, but, you know, just to hopefully inspire those of you that are listening out there. You know, I started walking, putting a goal for me, walk 1 mile without stopping, boom, check that off. Okay, well, I'm going to run 1 mile without stopping, boom, check that out. 5K, 10K, half marathon, marathons, 26.2 miles. And I just kept going. I've run 50 Ks, that's 31 miles. I've ran 50-mile runs. The longest distance I've participated in is a 100-kilometer run, which is 62 miles. So check those off. I ran two of those. And the next goal I have for myself, ladies and gentlemen, is to one day in the future run 100 miles within 24 hours. So that's my next goal. So as I was saying, you know, always put a goal for yourself and always continue to challenge yourself. And that's what I did for myself. It doesn't have to be health and wellness. It could be like read more, do something different. But always have a goal for yourself because you can accomplish great things. But in terms of my own personal work in health and wellness, and now that I am in this position of leadership as the vice president, you know, helping out the Dinant Food Sovereignty Alliance, is now we're at the high level of policy development, changing laws and challenging the federal government as well, and to push diabetes and heart disease off our nation. And we have that ability. We grew up with farming. The way of life teaching that we were told when we were young was, you know, get up in the morning before the sun comes up and go run and greet the sun and do your prayers, you know. And today we forgot that teaching. And I think a lot of our way of life teaching needs to come back to the forefront as well, because that was pushing diabetes and heart disease, a lot of these health problems, off our nation. And what better way to do it is to have total control of your food system. And that's what we're trying to do on the Navajo Nation.
Gloria Begay of the Dene Food Sovereignty Alliance made the comment that she particularly admires you because, if I put it in my words, you walk the talk and maybe run the talk. And that as she has interest in the history of the Navajo Nation and the governance, she was particularly struck by your run from Fort Sumner.
Oh, wow.
To mark the migration and treaty signing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think with what we're talking about, food sovereignty, it's really re-educating our folks. Everybody thinks it's about your body, and it is. It's about being healthy and taking better care of yourself. That's the message. But there's also a bigger message here, that a story of resilience, of being able to take care of yourself, because sovereignty is defined in just that way. Sovereignty means to be able to take care of yourself first. And here we use sovereignty a lot as a people or as a nation, as a government. And that's the same thing too, as a government, to be able to take care of your people. And, you know, this year it's marks the 150th anniversary of the signing of the Treaty of 1868, the treaty that we sign with our with the federal government, and to come back to our homeland. And that treaty that was signed represents the federal government acknowledging the inherent sovereignty of tribal people, and in this case, the Navajo Nation, with the treaty, the Navajo Treaty of 1868. And so this year, what we wanted to do was commemorate this 150 years by running the exact route that our ancestors took on their way home to the Navajo lands. And that is over 400 miles. And we had some great runners that joined us. And one thing that came out of this was a sense of pride in who we are as Navajo people. And there's was also a message of reconciliation, because when we planned this run from Fort Sumner, we thought it was for us, you know, the Navajo people. But we started out in Fort Sumner, and we made our way into various communities. And non-natives, were running with us as well. And we prayed and we fellowship with a lot of folks throughout that area. And it was our time to explain our history from our own lens. And I know a lot of folks that were non-natives said that they were sorry for the Navajo people and going through so much hurt and devastation. And I even had a person come up to me who was a descendant of the Calvary that, you know, put that hardship on the Navajo people. But it's quite interesting that guilt and frustration moved from one generation to the next. And so this person came up to me and said, "I am so sorry. My great-great-grandfather did that to the Navajo Nation." And they felt guilty. I guess that generational, if you made that generational trauma that followed the family. And we got to a point that we all said our forgiveness. We're sorry. And we accepted it in both ways, too. And so that was the healing of this trauma as we came all the way back to the Navajo homeland. And we came as one, you know. And like I was saying, we thought it was just for the Navajo people. But this was for all people in that region, all people in the Southwest, that it is time to forgive each other, maybe, and let down that baggage of guilt and hurt. And once you do that, that's true healing, and that's when true progress can happen for all people. And we're not going anywhere. You know, Native people are not going anywhere. Our non-Native friends are not going anywhere. So it is time for us to bind together and help each other out. And then that's what that message was. And it was quite an experience, a humbling experience. And at the same time, we were talking about health and wellness, you know, taking better care of ourselves, getting that message out there for everybody, saying diabetes is no joke, but we got to continue to relearn how to eat right and stay active. And even to the point where reading labels was one of the discussions we had on the way back from Fort Sumner. And we ran 400 plus miles back to Navajo, and that was the 150th commemoration that we did. And it was it took a big toll on our bodies. Just knowing that we walked upon the footsteps of our ancestors was very emotional for many of us. Emotional for me as being the vice president of the Navajo Nation, knowing that I was on trekking that same route back home that our elders took and our leaders took. And that's that resilience teaching that I was talking about earlier, is that the folks never gave up back there in Fort Sumner. And that's the same message we want to magnify on the Navajo Nation or in Southwest, throughout the Southwest, to say, don't give up. I mean, this story is specific for Navajo, but for other nationalities, there's always a story of overcoming and a resilience teaching in history, you know, that we can all utilize to be encouraged and utilize to inspire us to have hope and get away from some of these problems or social problems in our communities. You know, we have high levels of alcoholism and drug addiction in this whole region. It's no secret. But if we can inspire someone out there to say, hey, you can overcome alcoholism, drug addiction, depression, PTSD, because our ancestors never gave up 150 years ago, you know, I think that many people will be encouraged and inspired. And that's what this food sovereignty movement is all about, too, is to say that we got to return back to some of the teachings from the past, and to relearn that and talk about that now, so we can continue to inspire our younger generation to live better. And if it's health and wellness, that's great. if it's getting out of some of these traumas in their life, that's even more awesome. And at the end of the day, you know, you can see the people come together and to work together on the commonalities that are troubling us in our nation and our communities.
I would also like to take just a moment to acknowledge that part of that healing has involved work from the Navajo Nation Special Diabetes Project, which has some things in common with the Dene Food Sovereignty Alliance. But there is so much involved in the healing of the people, of the Navajo Nation, of individuals, whether it's of the health, whether it's of the spirit, and recovering from some of the damage that was done during the period of colonialism that involved beginning to survive on commodity foods, which led to things like, you know, the mutton and fry bread that's still a staple in many families.
Yeah, I mean, reteaching our people to eat right is a challenge. I mean, portion size, you know, we need to re-educate our people about that. And like I was saying earlier, reading labels is something new for us now because we don't know much of the ingredients in our foods that we consume. And I always use this as example on the Navajo Nation is I would say 90% of the foods that we consume on our Navajo Nation does not come from the Navajo Nation. It comes from somewhere else. Now, we don't know what's in these foods that we consume as well. And we have high rates of diabetes, heart disease. And many people don't know that, you know, cancer even comes from some of these food products. But to encourage our folks to return to farming and gardening could go a long way because that's the most healthiest food you can have, especially utilizing our own traditional seeds that have been passed down from generation to generation.
You are listening to Friday Forum. This is Rachel Cobb for KGLP. The first of the 2018 Navajo Nation presidential debates will begin at 5 p.m. Mountain Daylight Time this Tuesday, October 16th, at the Navajo Tech Wellness Center on the Crown Point, New Mexico campus, with a debate between Jonathan Nez and Joe Shirley Jr.'s running mates, Myron Leiser and Boone Nigren, followed by the main event with Mr. Nez and Mr. Shirley at around 6 p.m. Doors to the debate will open at 4 p.m. with tribal, state, and federal politicians setting up informational booths by 3 p.m. Navajo Nation Broadcasting, KTNN, KWRK, and NTU's campus station, KCZY, will provide live streaming of the presidential debate starting at approximately 6 p.m. The vice president's debate will not be aired. For more information about the debate or to reserve space for a political booth, you may email D, as in Dene, V as in Victor, A, N as in Navajo, D as in Dene, E, V as in Victor, E, R, at NavajoTech.edu. D, Vandever, at NavajoTech.edu. I'm speaking with Jonathan Nez, currently the vice president of the Navajo Nation, and one of two candidates in the finals for the presidential race in the Navajo Nation coming up. September 30th, you were at a meet and greet at Chichilta chapter, and former Navajo Nation First Lady Irma Bluehouse had a lot of questions, but it sounded like she was impressed by you and by your running mate, Myron Leiser.
Well, Mrs. Bluehouse always is an inspiration for us all because she continues the history of the Navajo Nation government so that young people can understand what our nation has gone through politically, government-wise. Her late husband was the president of the Navajo Nation for a short time. She was the first lady too as well. But I think many people know Irma as the daughter of the late Annie Dodge Winika, and the history that we all know of Annie Winika is a history of some great advocacy for the Navajo people, especially women.
The first woman on the Navajo Nation Council.
Yes, and going to Washington, D.C. to advocate for her people. I mean, there's have been great women leadership, and I think she really set the standards for women Navajo leadership. And to see Irma at our meet and greets is always inspiring when she speaks. And I'm glad she has is supporting us. And I think she, as well as we, have the heart for a brighter and better Navajo Nation, and especially for our younger generation.
One of the things that Mrs. Bluehouse and others have made a point of is that traditionally there is more interest in a governance which comes from the bottom up than from the top down. In the case of Irma Bluehouse, she didn't like the idea of people telling everybody what's going to happen. She wanted to have that conversation, that uplift from the various grassroots communities.
Absolutely. I mean, Irma has always said that to me that, you know, for me, I did work my way from the bottom up as well in my years in leadership, you know, starting at the age of 25, going back into the chapter house and the chapter meetings. Today, do you see many 25-year-olds in the chapter meeting? Maybe here and there, but not many, especially the younger generation. But I started there, and the folks in my community, you know, gave me an opportunity to serve by, you know, electing me into the local chapter government there as their vice president in Shonto, Arizona. You know, I was going to school at Northern Arizona University. You know, we hear from our parents or grandparents, go to school, get an education, and come home and help your people. You know, I took that literally. But when I went to go to school at Northern Arizona University and came home, it seemed like the door was closed. It was shut. You know, I asked for jobs here and there, and they always would say, you have no experience. And I would say, well, give me a job. I'm going to gain that experience, you know. And so I just went to school, went to go on from earning a bachelor's of science degree in political science and pre-law, and then getting a certificate in public management, getting a master's in public administration. And I was ready to start my PhD program. But the community members in Shonto wanted something different for me because they elected me into the council delegate position, and was elected three times there, also being on the Navajo County Board of Supervisors. I think they call it County Commission on this side. In Arizona, they call them Board of Supervisors. I did that for 6 years. I had to resign because that's when I got elected into being the vice president of the Navajo Nation, and almost 4 years being the vice president. Now, you know, asking the folks if the next step would fit into the Navajo Nation's plans by electing maybe one of the youngest presidents into office. And, you know, just like Irma said, working from the bottom up, knowing what's happening there at the local level is crucial and key. And being able to know governance all in all these levels, and now having the opportunity, and hopefully the Navajo Nation will allow me to be their president. And, you know, I will do my very best to advocate from the bottom up, not up there in Window Rock. And just like you were saying, you know, letting folks know, well, we know what's best for you, you know, people. That approach is the old politics. The new politics is embracing the local communities, way at the grassroots community base, and having them be a part of this, and giving them hope for their future. And I think our message is resonating. As you notice at the meet and greet, lots of people wanting change, and where they want to get away from that old politics. That old politics of yelling and screaming at rallies and going to chapter house, they're tired of it because there's little to no change in our communities. And for us, it's just having a frank discussion. And that's what we did at Chachatra is that we had a one-on-one discussion, nobody talking for us, no yelling and screaming, but just having an issue-based discussion about what their needs are. Because after that, they give us that teaching, and it becomes our teaching as leaders in for the Navajo Nation.
You selected Marin Leiser as your vice presidential candidate, as it happens, who's almost exactly 10 years older than you because you share the same birthday. But because of his business experience, you felt that was really important. Going back to what Irma was talking about and others, what do you think in the long term is the right balance in developing business from within the Navajo Nation versus bringing in outside entities to invest?
Yeah. Well, you know, with Mr. Leiser, he knows how to start a business. He knows how to maintain that business, and he knows how to grow a business, expand a business. And that is very, very rare on the Navajo Nation because of the complexity of laws, especially from the federal government, those policies and laws, and then our own laws on the Navajo Nation. So when I asked him to be my running mate, that's what I considered, is that he has that experience. He doesn't have to learn all the policies and the laws for business development or economic development. He had firsthand knowledge because he knows those barriers in government and in law. And so what I'm looking to him to do is, let's streamline some of those laws. Let's change some of those laws. Let's make it easier for our people to open up businesses. Let's be a business-friendly Navajo Nation for our young people, And rather than having someone off the nation come in and set up shop and run a business, what we want is our own Navajo entrepreneurs to have that ability to offer their goods and services to the Navajo public. And the ultimate goal one day is to have a self-sufficient nation, meaning that everyone knows that a lot of revenue leaves the Navajo Nation. First of the month, every payday, and, you know, Gallup is awesome, don't get me wrong, but Gallup, you get a lot of funds from the Navajo people.
At the beginning of the month, end of the month, people get the checks, and Gallup's population temporarily balloons up from, what, 22,000 to over 100,000?
Yeah.
And that's money from the Navajo Nation and elsewhere.
Well, absolutely. And one of the goals that we have is to spend more of our dollars on the Navajo Nation so that we can begin to have health and wellness centers, so that we can have public libraries on our nation. And that's the ultimate goal that we have, and who better to do it than a person who's been through all that experience. And Myron Leiser brings that experience to the table. And like he says, you know, Navajo Public, if you give us an opportunity to be your president and vice president, there's no learning curve here. Right on November 7th, we're ready to rock and roll. I'm pretty updated on the issues that are happening on Navajo. Myron is updated, and we're not fresh out of college. Where we haven't been out of the loop in government. We're ready to go, and we're not going to wait till inauguration day. I think we're going to go out back to the public and tell people and allow them to give us some ideas. And what thing I love about Myron is he says, we want to put smart people that are smarter than us in these cabinet level positions. And I totally agree. And, you know, we're 10 years apart. Usually the tradition is a presidential candidate will usually get somebody younger than him. I'm 43 years old, and I want somebody in there that has the experience. And Myron does have a family. And he has those family values, family ties to Coal Mine, New Mexico, right outside of Window Rock there on the New Mexico side. And he's from New Mexico. That's where he grew up at. And, you know, he knows the plight of the Navajo people. And, you know, I'm glad that him and his wife, Dottie, accepted this challenge in their life. I mean, they could have easily said, no, I got a business. But I know by him saying yes, by both of them saying yes, they do have a heart for the Navajo people and their future. And I'm glad they said that they would be willing to be a part of this ticket.
We were talking about the balance of one kind earlier. Another kind of balance that I wondered about is how you would weigh the need for new ideas versus the respect for traditions.
Well, I mean, we have to focus on the growth areas throughout the Navajo Nation. Some communities are wanting development. I come from Shonto, Arizona. We just recently put a new C-Store gas station there. And one of the ideas that we received was, why don't you put a C-Store gas station with a big restroom? And I'm like, well, big restroom? Why? It's been open for 2 years, and it's right in the center of Page, Antelope Canyon, Kienta, Monument Valley, Grand Canyon. And so we built the C-Store gas station with a big restroom. And now we thought we were building a store for our Navajo public. But now the majority of those that utilize, that buy from that store are non-Navajos. They stop there, and the buses are beginning to stop there. The tour bus is stopping there. So there are communities out there that are willing to embrace economic and community development. But there are others, communities that are saying, okay, well, we appreciate our way of life and the contentment that they have in their communities. And they would rather drive to another community for, you know, their goods and services, which is okay with us. That's that delicate balance of culture and tradition. And I think what we really need to do is also to focus on these growth areas throughout the Navajo Nation, like Kayenta, Tuba City, Chinle, Crown Point, Shiprock, Delcon, you know. But at the same time, we need to also recognize that our elders do not equate economic development to a mall, let's say. Some of them are content with how they're living, and they would rather have no development in their community, which is fine with us, which is fine with me. But those younger generations, they want their malls. They want their movie theaters. We got to bring some of those there so that they don't come out. But it's been a tradition ever since I was young, you know. Every Saturday after mom and dad gets paid, we jump in the truck and we're going to town, you know, and we go out there and have an event with the family. But I think we can still do that here on the Navajo Nation if we can offer those goods and services that people go off the nation and have them there on the Navajo Nation.
One of the more recent traditions is that in many Native communities, the gas station becomes a community center when they expand them to include things like laundry and groceries and sometimes video rentals. This, I think, is something that may continue and expand. It's another way to encourage people to keep their money on the Navajo Nation.
Absolutely. We want to draw folks from Gallup to Window Rock. Let me just say this now. Did you know that the Bashes in Window Rock now offers organic foods and healthier food items? And I don't think maybe the co-op here does just that, but we have some healthier foods. I envision one day we do something awesome with the Fort Wingate lands there. Maybe put a mall, an outlet center on our Navajo Nation land, and then market that. And I would love to see Gallup come to the Navajo Nation and buy goods and services from there, because that's economic development. But right now it's the other way around. We leave and we buy our goods and get our services off the nation. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying anything bad about that. But if you're a true sovereign nation, you have to think like that for your people. And if you're a sovereign nation and you want, and like I was saying some time back, is that we should be able to have our own economy on the Navajo Nation.
There have been some promising developments. The new little shopping center in Burnside, west of Ganado.
And it's just been so popular.
Yeah, a hardware store, Lowe's, pizza, laundry. That's a nice model for what could develop elsewhere.
Yes, and these hubs throughout the Navajo Nation, these business hubs, you know. I envision one day we have business incubators there for our community members. So if they want to start a business, develop business plans, those resources are there readily available for our younger generation or our people to open up their own stores. And I think one big untapped resources is tourism. Tourism is, the, you know, people come all over the world to experience Navajo, but we don't regulate that, and we should regulate that. And that's one of our plans. We should have, you know, they call it the Grand Circle, right? Up there, up in Colorado. We should have our own Navajo Nation Grand Circle, where we say if you're visiting a Navajo Nation, then you have to follow this route all throughout the Navajo Nation. And that's where growth areas, and you can put these types of economic development projects along the way, but they'll be going through Monument Valley, Kayenta, Shiprock to see the Pinnacle, go out to Chaco Canyon, go into Crown Point, go through Gallup, all the way into Window Rock. You know, we can help each other out here economically. And then they'll go into Hopi. See, we can help our neighbors there in Hopi to experience Hopi. And then back into Tuba City, then they go out Grand Canyon, and then they're back in Las Vegas. And that would be their experience. If we are a true sovereign nation, then maybe it's time for us to regulate our visitors on the Navajo Nation when they come to experience Navajo. And then ecotourism is another thing, too. You know, like the Shanto gas station I'm talking about there, the convenience store. We're wanting to put a trail system around that whole marketplace so that people can do trails. And then back to health and wellness, right? I was talking about trails being developed throughout the Navajo Nation to push diabetes off our nation. Those same trails can attract our visitors to go in horseback ride, bike ride in our communities and see a different view of the Navajo Nation and doing going on these trails, running or walking out there. And we're doing that here at Window Rock. We have a new trail that goes from the museum all the way up to the actual Window Rock, and people get to experience that area, and probably they would never have experienced it if that option wasn't there.
You mentioned earlier that without forgiveness, it's hard to move forward. But that said, the Navajo Nation still needs to be diligent, as do other Native entities, against outside forces trying to steal value from the Navajo Nation, for example. A case in point is the so-called fake Native jewelry. There's a big trial in Albuquerque. Folks that actually used to be in Gallup actually had facilities in the Philippines making fake Native jewelry and then selling that through shops, legitimate outlets, but fake jewelry. How do you, as a potential president of the Navajo Nation, guard and protect the interests of your people against such activities?
If people want to experience Navajo, then they should come to the Navajo Nation. I know this is probably a controversial comment that I'm going to say, but it's true, is that we need to get rid of the middle people and to have our artisans, our basket makers, our jewelry makers have a place to sell on the Navajo Nation, a marketplace type, so that people can come if they want authentic Native American jewelry. That's where they can get it. And that's the whole part of having that Navajo experience, right? Right now, our jewelers go and sell it to the middle person. And the middle person will probably jack that price up by twofold, right? And sometimes, you know, you get these counterfeit, these fake jewelries that are coming in because there's a big market for it and popularity in Native American jewelry. But we can all work together, I think. I think if like border towns such as Gallup, Flagstaff, and those that are selling jewelry there, If we work together, maybe having a type of training, a certification training, right? To say that this is true, authentic Navajo jewelry. Maybe there's a association that can be created to give that certification. And then here off the Navajo Nation, if you go through that training, if you want to say diversity training or saying that you have authentic jewelry of Navajo, then you get a sticker that you can place on your place of business here off the Navajo Nation to show that, yes, it is. And that commitment is there by that business saying that, yeah. And then we can market it out there on Navajo Nation and say, okay, there is true Native American jewelry being sold at this business in Gallup, New Mexico. Go check it out. And, you know, that's working together right there with the off Navajo Nation business people. But, you know, we have Navajo businesses here as well in the city of Gallup and all around the border towns.
You look at the situation in Sage and Ganado, the Sage Hospital, and the term carpetbaggers comes to mind. People from the outside come in, they take over a facility, they reap the rewards, and, you know, case in point, the former CEO of Sage Hospital getting massive funds. Now they're out, and that money's gone, too. The Navajo Nation doesn't have direct control over IHS entities, but as the president, what would your philosophy be with regard to monitoring against that kind of corruption?
Well, I think working with the leadership in Washington, D.C. is crucial. And I look at our vice president candidate, who is really articulate in the English language, to be that advocate for us, not just in business, but also in the IHS and the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Right now, I think, is a great opportunity to change some of the policies in Washington, D.C., or some of the laws that pertain to Native Americans. I mean, people say, well, there's a whole bunch of Republicans up there and they don't like Natives. But one of their philosophy is self-sufficiency and self-reliance. They're not going to give us money. They're already cutting money to tribal communities. But if we tell them and frame the discussion to say, okay, well, allow us to do more and give us a more authority in tribal communities like these IHS facilities, I bet they would grant it because they are strong in a strong position to say, well, tribal communities, you need to be more self-sufficient. And that's what self-governance is all about. You know, being a leader in Window Rock or even being a council delegate, there's a certain things that we can't do at these facilities that are self-governance. Like even the 638, they have their own board there. And schools are the same way, you know, they elect their own board members in there. But the oversight is with the from the Navajo Nation government. But how much authority and oversight do we have? That has always been a debate every day now. We try to tackle corruption. But we're told that, you know, that's not your authority, Window Rock. That's local authority. So that's why we challenge local communities, local voters, that they need to vote in good people into the offices. And if they're tired of the same old, then we need those outspoken individuals to run for office there in the local communities and then be in position, these board positions too, to have competent people. Ones that have some financial background, I think, a lot. And, you know, with what we're saying, with especially my wife, who is vying for the first lady position, is to go out and into the schools and recommend teaching more financial literacy. So if you build that up, getting folks to take care of their money, maybe even saving money and maybe investing money for their future, you know, people won't get into that position and start squandering resources that are supposed to go out to the Navajo public. It's a balance. I think for Indigenous people, for Native American people throughout the United States, they always say we're in two worlds, right? One is this dominant society, which we go to school and we learn. And then there's also our own way of life, our own teaching that comes from our elders and the history. And sometimes we don't teach that as much as we should, especially on the Navajo Nation. It's mostly this dominant way of thinking. And those of us that have gotten that education and that dominant way of thinking, we come home back to our homelands, especially like for me, back to the Navajo Nation, and we try to incorporate this foreign, foreign way of thinking and try to incorporate that in government or in society back at home, and it tends not to work. There's always just that roadblock, that wall that you hit. Why? I think it's because we don't utilize this dominant way of thinking and bringing this our own traditional way of thinking and putting that together and embracing that, because that could be very powerful for the future of the Navajo public. And so I think we really need to bring the two thoughts together to benefit the Navajo public there on the Navajo Nation. That's what we plan to do. I think we need to challenge schools to bring more programs, especially the state schools. You know, we're always fighting with the state schools about teaching culture and tradition. Yeah, language is offered in our schools, but what if you they call it an immersion program when it's you only speak Navajo for an hour a day, while then the rest of the 23 hours you may be speaking English. You know, that's not immersion. I mean, true immersion is going out there for 3 months at a time. And just being immersed with the language and the culture and tradition. And you know, some of us were raised like that. When we got out of school in May, first thing mom and dad would say is, you're going to sheep camp. You're going to grandma's house. And we were all the cousins, the kids, we would all get hauled off, even kicking and screaming, saying no. But today I'm so, so glad and thankful that my parents did that to me, because that was true immersion there. 3 months, all summer, there was a teaching of resilience, running after the sheep in 100-degree weather, overcoming, you know, things that was being taught to us. Because we all know life isn't easy, but a lot of the teaching that we receive from our elders and our family is crucial today, than I think more than ever before. Because there's a high rate of people giving up, going into drinking and alcohol, alcoholism and drugs, depression. We got PTSD in our veterans. And sad to say, we have high rates of suicide in our communities. And how do we inspire and encourage our people? I think just embracing who we are as Navajo and letting our Navajo folks know that we're resilient people, as I was mentioning earlier. We overcame as a nation, as a people, 150 years ago, and we came back here. That message should be magnified throughout our schools on the Navajo Nation, so that kids can say, man, I feel like giving up, but you know what? My ancestors never gave up, so I'm going to keep going, keep pushing. And just that type of teaching alone can reinstill self-sufficiency and self-reliance back into our people. And I see a healthier and stronger Navajo Nation 150 years from now. So, she kudo o ahiha do le jo skida na antine e baya delti an hia o e nasit it do le no akhta na ni tina masana che na la ni tlini gi akon hia kudo da inoltra da bidi ni tlini khalchin ni nda kregi akon de kujit da oltra ya ha ish ya da hosla kuj e blagana ba ol in lo blagana man antkin e ya da hosla un jon o nte kuj sha ni he ol in lo ni an tinesha e do bin da hodil al shno de shnishik en atlini al hi het a al la asling kuj blagana ba ol in lo blagana bin antkin aro kuj do ni he ni masani hi cheni nal elk da bin antkine di jinje be na ni tin dole al hi hit a go edo da go in hit ni hen hat ab zil dole na so net ni n so bantsas keshik en otlini e shin do n khalchen do nin da kregin hi ge dan lenigi بچاشن دلش. آدو ایبه هدا اینوش نده بدی نیدوله. خیلی دیگه ناسته. آده که دهوی تونلا آنخه. آکند بیچی نیکه. ای هنگی ای به هدا آنیل نیدوله آنیلش کو. این انتینگی ای کد نخالشن آنی نکه یکی چنده دن لینوله دشنودش نه. ایشی ای کد ندات نیتینه. بنده دیل آلت آخو اجت ایگو هنی. تاشی اندی کد ندات نیتین. شیش لنده. اخیر لا آهندی نیه داغ ات هلانگی آهندی نیه لین ات هلانگی آشنه خه شن خو خنس نودش نه این انتخنه بنده دیل آل خود لین با هجلیا خود داغ ات هلان این یه چیز باید چیانگی ای بچه ندات نیتین دلش نخالشن نیه کدوم میستر لایزر دوشی ای یا Nasko a deit in do lech do nasko di krati no da na nitkin kut a lahan deitle do e nat a go da nasko ye nasko ne nije a ko hat nile ni he kut a ban sikes ni khalchin ni hik e dan lenigi ge go bena nishita yi lagi ni hi dahan do dahan e a jen ho zishik e nalini Dadal kalba da dil nil. Navajo Nation. Nihid dahan do dal do nihid kaan do lwalat nane. Ajin hol jishik eno llin. Ebni na eko do. Nakha i da i do nil. Di ko November 6 go nil. Nihid jib ka do lil. Nez do laizer e nas. Nid nijit. Na antkinigi e hud a. Lka di jahno. Ya yaltkit da do ni do lil. So konso shin hi ja si do le to he the Jonathan Nez ni ja hat si he
I've been speaking to Jonathan Nez, the vice president of the Navajo Nation, now running for the position of president of the Navajo Nation with his running mate Myron Leiser. Thank you so much for spending this time with me today.
Thank you.